That was great. Did your dad ever talk about the Jazz Loft to you, or?
No, man. Yeah. He never talked about any one spot in New York. He talked in general about the cities, you know, where he lived. You know, his life was kind of in phases. You know, home in St. Louis and Indianapolis, then, you know, New York, then Europe, then back to New York, and then Philly. But you know, he had experienced so much that he forgot a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, so I heard a lot of the stuff, but then depending upon who he reconnected with or who was in town, there'd always be some new story that would creep up. You know, and but you know, for me, he was my dad first and foremost. And you know, just as big in his life, in addition to music, was church. You know, so I remember when, you know, we were going to a church, which was then, and it's actually the same church. It's just in a different location where the memorial service is going to be held. This was back in 1900. Because it'll tell my age a little bit, but my dad and I were living on 9th Street, between Lombard and South, before it cost $1,000 to, you know, get somebody to get you permission to go look at something in that area. And there was a church on Lombard between 8th and 9th. We started going there, and we'd be there, you know, two or three nights a week between prayer, Bible study, and choir rehearsal. And the church didn't have any drums. So my dad would bring his drums for choir rehearsal. If he had gigs that weekend, he'd play the gigs. And then Sunday morning, bring the drums back for church on Sunday morning and take them home after service. You know, and the sanctuary was on the second floor. So it was more than a notion getting the drums in and out. But you know, that was just as big a thing as, you know, my dad sitting down with his practice pad and his sticks was just as common an occurrence as, you know, my dad sitting down with his Bible to read or pray. And, you know, anybody who saw him recently with the proliferation of new apparel, they saw the, you know, I love Jesus hats and everything else like that. So, you know, if you didn't know him, you know, a lot of people would think that he might've been a preacher or something. You know, you see this sharp guy walking around and yesterday when he's dressed down, you know, he had on an I Love Jesus cap, you know, you really don't think this is a, you know, a lifelong jazz musician.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, you know, right now I'm in a zone right now. I'm not myself. But you know, with everything that's going on, the thing that's gotten me through the last few days has been the fact that, he did instill, that spirituality and that faith, and that connection to God. And that's been what's gotten me through. So even though he's gone, there's more than just what he did for a vocation that is getting me through right now. I mean, I appreciate, you know, the love and the support, but you know, honestly, man, you know, when I'm waking up in the morning these last few days, there's no tune that can comfort me for, you know, the fact that my pop is gone. You know, because for a long time he was known as the man with the little boy. And, you know, we were so intertwined that there are people that went to the church, that I grew up in that were, one, surprised that I got married, two, surprised that I moved out of Philadelphia. Not that, you know, it's impossible, but that's how connected we were. So, you know, for me, the greatness of what we hear in tunes like the one you just played, are not so much an example of his ability as a technician or as a musician, but the spirit of who he was coming through. And that's just how God allowed him to express who he was, which was, you know, sitting behind a set of drums, playing music. But the spirit of who he was was so much richer than that, and was expressed in so many other ways, man.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And, you know, and his individuality always came through. I mean, not just in the way he played, but in the way he looked, in the way he dressed, in the way he looked while he was playing. His movements, I've never seen any other drummer make movements like that while they play. And he was just he was one of a kind. Yeah. And as far as his faith, I mean, like you said, I didn't know your father very well, but I did have the opportunity to spend, you know, several hours with him, you know, one-on-one last summer. And he talked to me about his faith. And what struck me was that it was not a... It was a very active faith. He was seeking. Mm-hmm. He talked to me about specific preachers who he had recently heard and the effect they had on him. He talked to me about his interest in mysticism and Jewish mysticism. He what he expressed to me was that even though he was obviously a Christian, mm-hmm. a deep interest in Judaism, which I found to be very interesting. But the main point was just that it was. He had this faith, but it was not a dead faith. It was very much a living faith that was very much a part of him, and it was active, and he was still seeking, and that just really struck me.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, this for me is a point of interest because primarily because, you know, right now, you know, church and my faith is a big part of what my life is and who I am right now. And, you know, my father exhibited in expressing those things that you say he expressed to you. He exhibited the true life of a Christian in that, you know, the God that we serve is alive and we believe that he's living, breathing, and that it's about expanding the kingdom. And that comes by sharing the love, you know, that we have. So for me, you know, that's awesome that you were able to pick that up, because unfortunately there are so many people who just have gotten caught up in religion. And, you know, so for my father, after all those years, to still have a connection to his faith and to his spirituality beyond just the traditions of religion, was a testament to, you know, how he could continue playing and still have so much fire in his playing in some of these later recordings that we're hearing. Because it wasn't like he was spiritual in the 60s and he rode that wave
right
the rest of his life. You know, those two roads of his life were both still very active, and so they continued to feed each other.
Yeah. If I could ask, when was the last time you heard your dad play?
Jeez, let me think. The last time I heard my dad play. The last time I heard my dad play, I believe, unless I'm mistaken, wow, it was last summer. My dad played on the West Oakland Jazz Festival.
Right. I think that's when I met you.
Yeah. And I was here for a few days and heard my dad play on the festival, and we, you know, we made a couple jam sessions while I was here. That was the last time I heard my dad play. Not the last time I'd seen him, but the last time I heard him
play.
Right.
Okay. I think we're going to get into some more music now. What I'm going to do now is, you know, we just heard that track from the Jazz Loft that was yesterday's. So I'm going to go back to one of the albums I played one track from before. This is the 1976 Walt Dickerson album on the Why Not label. We heard Walt Dickerson's Keys of Wisdom from this album a few hours ago, I guess. So I'm going to go play this version of Yesterday's now. So as I said, this is 1976. It's the Why Not label. It's Walt Dickerson on vibes, Wilbur Ware on bass, and Edgar Bateman Jr. on the drums. Thank you.
Walt Dickerson here on the Edgar Bateman Jr. Memorial Show. Terribly sorry for that noise in the background there. We've got some wires tangled here. Edgar Bateman III is still in the studio with us. He's actually talking to Victor North on the phone now, so hence all the commotion in the background. I do apologize for that. What we just heard was from Walt Dickerson's 1976 release on the Why Not label. That was yesterday's Walt Dickerson on vibes, Wilbur Ware on bass, and Edgar Bateman Jr. on the drums. We have made our way through the entire commercially released recorded discography of Edgar Bateman Jr. We've played selections from the albums released between 1976 and 2009. We've played the albums released in the 60s in their entirety. We've also had a chance to hear a few live cuts, and we're going to jump into another live recording right now. This is, I haven't heard this before, so, we'll see what it's like. This is from March 17th, just of this past year, March 17th, 2010. It's Elliot Levin, Warren Ory, and Edgar Bateman recorded live at Tritone right here in Philadelphia. So let's check out an excerpt of this live performance.
Warren Ory, long bass. Yeah. I love you, Warren Ory. I'm very pleased to have Mr. Edgar Bateman on drums. Elliot Levin, and thanks so much for Dan and Larry to put this together and keep this going. The last like 2 months or so, I think 99% of my gigs have been here at Tritone, so I'm grateful for this place for sure. Place to play my music. And thanks a lot. Hope you enjoy. Wolfman Jack, first full load, closes high death wide. Wolfman Jack Calvin, muted modal sheets of sonic funded phonics. Who knows where the first of second decade of second century time goes? Gato Gordo Oleos, spun grooving high, octane up the sex tube, octave, sex pupil, missive, misconstrued by mini smart ass card, misstrewed by faulty touchscreen scene. Of yet another just dream, long lanky reek of perfect skank, crescendo, phantasm, and dark skin wrapped tight set for sorted, sorted size of reality regret. The best is yet to come in youthful folly of feeble, jolly codgerdom, as if the acid inspirations of adolescent sense some as stiff as cup stroke palm pilot members of the family of man can ever plan to be. As swift as it by popular treasuries and wrapped in ecstatic comma tragedies to be played on latter day stages of a wonder name, wonder wage of a span of a kind on buzz.
Thank you. Thank you.
Edgar Bateman Jr. on the drums, Warren Ory on the bass, Elliot Levin on the tenor saxophone, recorded live at Tritone in March of this year, March 2010. Just gave you a little taste of that one. We're nearing the end of our time together. I apologize if you hear a buzzing. I'm not sure if that's just in my phones or if that is coming over the airwaves. But Edgar Bateman III is still here with me, and we just wanted to go over the information about the memorial service and the memorial concert. Both of these events are June 5th, Saturday, June 5th. The service is at 10 in the morning at Pentecostal Bridegroom Temple at 6425 Worcester Street. And then that will be followed at 3 in the afternoon by a memorial concert at the Clef Club. The Clef Club, of course, is at Broad and Fitzwater Street, so that is at 3 p.m. Cards and other expressions of love can be sent to the family at this email address, masterdrummeredgarbateman@gmail.com, or by regular mail to P.O. Box 3505, Fort Mill, South Carolina, 29708. Edgar, you wanted to share some information about the memorial service?
I just, you know, wanted to say that it would be an honor and a pleasure to have everyone that is available and willing and able to attend the service. Not so much for me at this point, but I have four children, and it's important for me, though they have been made aware on many levels of who their grandfather, or as they say, Pop-Pop, of who Pop-Pop is. I'd love for them to be able to see what the world thought of them, as opposed to it just being information coming from Dad, because I have a couple adolescents and a teenager, so that means that what Dad says right now doesn't have too much credibility. So it'd help me if you could help me celebrate my father, my Pop, and let my children know the legacy that was Pop-Pop on June 5th, both either at the church and or at the Clef Club later in the afternoon.
Okay. I can't really think of any other better way to close than with the words of the son of the man we've been celebrating today. So all I will do is thank you so much for listening today. Thank you for spreading the love that you have for Edgar Bateman Jr. And just a few individuals I want to thank for helping me get some of this material together. Daniel Peterson, Dan Buskirk of WPRB in Princeton, Bobby Zankel, Tom L., known to some as the Lone Gunman. He's responsible for getting me all the live material that we played today. And then a special thanks also to Kelvin Anderson, host of G-Town Radio's Anderson Taped, who was with me for the first 5 or 6 hours today. So I couldn't have done this without them. And of course, the most important thanks is to you, Edgar Bateman III. It really means a lot to me that you came down here and shared this with me. So thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity, man. You just don't know after the week that I've had trying to handle the practical side of my father being gone. This was a very cathartic experience for me, so I appreciate that. You really don't know what this has done for me today, so I appreciate that, and I thank you and everybody else that helped facilitate and make this come to pass today. I appreciate that.
Okay, I'm going to leave you all with a cut from the very first album that Edgar Bateman appeared on. We're going back to the album that we heard at the top of the show. I'm going to leave you with the final cut on that album, the standard If I Should Lose You. It's Walt Dickerson on vibes, Austin Crowe on piano, Eustace Julamet on bass, and Edgar Bateman Jr. on the drums. Thank you all one more time. Thank you.